These are presentation. I'm presenting on behalf of a group of people, Mo Yan and Dr. Issa, Cancer Survivor's Knowledge of Personalized Medicine Diagnostics. This is the group in which I am participating as a research scientist and postdoc fellow, our mission and our vision. Nothing to disclose, but I want to acknowledge that partial funding support for this work came through a grant in which Dr. Issa is the PI, is from InHealth, the Institute of Health Technology Studies. And this study is part of an ongoing series of studies aiming at understanding and analyzing the clinical utility of genomic diagnostics and pharmacogenomic applications. This particular piece with the aim of determining cancer survivors' knowledge and preferences for attributes in pharmacogenomic diagnostics and compare it with those that were recently diagnosed with cancer. So there is a difference here. For those of you who are not familiar with the terminology, a newly diagnosed cancer will be a person diagnosed, in our case, defined as the person diagnosed with cancer, breast cancer, or colorectal cancer, between 1 and 4 years at the moment of doing the study. And a cancer survivor will be a person in treatment in 5 years or more, disease-free. So those are the two groups that we're trying to compare. So we had a cross-sectional design survey based on a validated instrument. This instrument is the Patient Preferences for Personalized Medicine. And we had a total of 168 patients in our sample. This sample was drawn from a nationally representative sample of cancer patients. The survey was done online, so the surveys the link to the surveys were sent to the patients, and they voluntarily decided to participate in the survey. So that was done in October 2010, and we had a data collection period of 12 days. And well, we had a a brief table trying to summarize for the two subgroups within breast cancer and colorectal patients and survivors. But basically, we had 54.5 years the mean age for the breast cancer patients and 42 for the colorectal cancer, a mean income of 65,000 for the breast cancer and 100,000 for the colorectal cancer. Of course, you know that average are heavily influenced by stream measures. So we had some well above the 200,000. The majority were Caucasian and had some sort of college or associate degree. And in both cases, and the age at which they had an early cancer diagnostic, 76.5% for the breast cancer, 70% for the colorectal cancer. So far so good. We are doing a good job in diagnosing cancers at an early moment, at early stage, which is very important for prognosis. And 44% of them were diagnosed in the range of 2 to 5 years before the study for breast cancer and 53 for colorectal cancer, were classified as newly diagnosed patients. And for those in the status of cancer survivors, we had 38% of them in remission for the breast cancer group, and 33% for the colorectal cancer. And 9% of the breast cancer were in active monitoring, and 26% in the case of colorectal patients. And when they were asked if they were familiar or understood the terminology, you know, we had that those that were newly diagnosed were more familiar and understood the terminology. And we had, you know, questions about, okay, the genetic testing, what is personalized medicine, or certain specific tests, Herceptin test, Oncotype DX, or gene expression profiling testing. In the case of breast cancer, and in the case of colon cancer, then we had the KRAS and the GTE1A1 test. So those that are around the diagnosis recently will have a more bigger understanding on what these words mean. And also, those that are at younger ages are more knowledgeable. Both groups, breast cancer and colon cancer, see the light green bars are those in the younger age group, 18 to 34 years. Same variables as genetic testing, Herceptin, PM, Oncotype DX, GP for breast cancer, and KRAS, UGT, GP, PM, and genetic testing in colon cancer. And also, when you are at a higher income bracket, then you are more likely to understand more about these new technologies. So basically, if you're recently diagnosed, you're younger, and you're at a higher bracket of income, then you're more likely to know and understand the meaning of these technologies, which makes a significant difference when we're talking about shared decision-making and the ability of the health professionals to communicate with the patients and try to have them in an informed decision in the case of having or not having chemotherapy. Like in the case of breast cancer, women at a low recurrence score, they can skip chemotherapy if they are given or provided with the appropriate information. And same here, that the newly diagnosed cancers were more familiar with which genes are associated with the specific type of cancer. So in the case of breast cancer, they were more familiar with the ER status or the HER2 status or the PR status. And of course, there is a large group of patients that are unsure or they don't know, because of course, this is even, you know, new for a lot of health professionals, but still there was a group with a fairly good level of knowledge of that. Same for the colon cancer, UGT, KRAS, other genes. And, of course, they were more likely to have a participation of the information contained in the test in the decision-making process if the cost is acceptable for them. So in this case, if they have insurance, of course they will have access to the test, but if they have to pay out of their own pocket, then the price that they will have to cover will make a difference in the preference, of course. If they have to pay out of their own pocket, they will have second thoughts about it. So if you see here breast cancer, 64% will definitely take the test, whereas 48% in the colon cancer. But if you take a look at the positive, more than 80% in both cases will seriously consider the option of having the test included in the decision-making, therapeutical decision-making process. As a conclusion, we have that there is a knowledge deficit among cancer survivors in comparison to the newly diagnosed patients. There's a gap that is important to fill. There is an impaired ability to seek long-term and follow-up care, especially when you don't have insurance. Then those difficulties, those disparities increase. There is a need for increased adoption and use of genomics and personalized medicine, especially to inform more the patients about what's the meaning of the terminology, what are the possibilities that the technologies bring to them, and also to incorporate this information into the regular practice, especially in public health. My area of interest in research is the incorporation of personalized medicine and genomics into public health practice. And we see that as technology is evolving, and it's improving, it's getting cheaper, then we'll have more opportunities to inform our patients and get better decision-making processes and outcomes. I want to also acknowledge this, our team and some support that we have had for our research. So thank you very much. And if there is one or two questions.
So your findings were sort of predicated on the cost being acceptable, yes?
In the cost of the test? Yes, the patients will be, I mean, because each, well, not all of them, but a gene expression profiling test might be around $4,000. So if the test is covered by their insurance, they will be very likely to have the test or be comfortable with having it. But if they have to pay for out of their own pocket, then they will need more information about, okay, what will be the benefit for you if you have this test? So what kind of clinical information, what kind of clinical relevant information will I have and improve my decision making, quality of life, so on and so forth, if I have this test done, if I have to pay myself?
So there's type 1 and type 2 errors possible here.
Yes.
With maybe people are, if it's free, they're happy to take it, and their providers are happy to recommend it when it's not particularly useful.
Yes.
And
yeah, and we published a paper recently, I mean, there's with more information about this. These were part of the preliminary results. And also, when you're making the decision, also you have to consider, okay, there is a question asking them if the health insurance company will have access to my genomic information. And then some of them will be reluctant, even though they have insurance and they have, like, the payment capacity. They don't have a financial barrier to access the testing. They will have a consideration or a worry or concern that the insurance company will have some sort of information coming out of the testing. So that was kind of a second thought. Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
Okay, I will start by the second. Basically, the purpose of the testing is to have a prognosis on what will be the course of your disease. In the case of GEP test, genome expression profiling, the outcome of the test is a recurrence score. So there will be a probability of how likely you will be to have a recurrence of your cancer or not. If the test comes low, so the recurrence score is low, then you have a probability of not having chemotherapy because you, in practical terms, you don't need it. But you have to explain that to the patient in order to share the decision with the patient if the person is willing to have or not having the chemotherapy. You see what I mean? Right now, this is in process. This is part of another study. The patients seriously consider not having the chemotherapy because that will save them not only money, but also will increase quality of life with the treatment and after the treatment. And the first one is, well, when you define personalized medicine, there are many definitions of personalized medicine, but basically what we were telling to the patients is that we are trying to get the capacity of adjusting the treatment that you need to the conditions that you have in your particular case. So it's not the technical definition because there are many options for defining personalized medicine, including those that say the personalized medicine is like a wrong term to call that, but it's been like historically has been developed. I will say it's more for subgroups.
Uh,
Not in this sample of patients. I mean, we do have some measurements about stress, but in a sample of Canadian patients. And it is important. I mean, because it's just like any other economical side of health. You know, in health economics, unfortunately for the person working in health, it's considered an inferior good. I mean, health comes after you have a roof on your top, you have food in the table, and some other needs that you have to fill up first, and then health will come second. So that's why it's called, technically in economics, inferior goods. And that's why the people perceive that. I mean, okay, yeah, this is important, but then I need to have, you know, pay the rent, pay the utilities, pay the food in the table, so on and so forth. So this is another variable that is important in a decision-making model for the patients. There was another hand. Oh, yes, Rita. Oh, well, this was based on a national data set, a database of cancer patients. So we select a subgroup of the national sample to send the survey links. It was more exploratory, so there was no calculation or estimation of power. It was more like a sample of convenience. Yes, there was within the framework, the sampling framework, we did a random selection to send, you know, 300, 400 people the links and then have that response rate. Okay, thank you.